show. Hey everyone, welcome to this week's episode of The Boundless Show. We are back with you and now in March. So welcome to March alongside of all of us. As I often do, what is coming up later on in the show, for our inbox, we have a girl who feels like whenever she gets together with other women, she ends up doing most of the talking. Hey, points for self-awareness. That's good. But she wants to know, how can she learn to be a better listener? So one of our counselors is going to weigh in on that. And then for our culture segment, our own Adam Holtz and Paul Ace from Plugged In here at Focus on the Family are joining us to discuss the value of good entertainment. Like, is there good entertainment? How can we get value out of maybe watching movies, watching TV series, having great conversations around them? Is it possible? They're going to let us know. And so we will do that. Okay, here we are for our roundtable, though, and we thought we would have a fun conversation today on the juxtaposition of trendy or traditional. We've already had an argument prior to taping about what the definitions are of that. So we don't know. So as people talk, they can just advocate for their own definition. I think that'll be great. And we'll have fun talking about this based on where we are with this. We were talking hair parts already. We were talking like homesteading. We've been talking foods, all kinds of stuff, clothing choices. So let's dive in. We have got Sterling, Georgia, and Grace here. Hey, y'all.
Hey, how's it going?
It's going well. So I'm looking forward to this conversation because I feel like I need some insights here. So let's get started. If you had to put yourself on a trendy versus traditional scale, go ahead and put yourself on that scale and maybe say what that means to you so that we can get the definitions in here of how we're describing this. So, Sterling, why don't you kick us off?
Okay. I have very weak definitions. I don't know where to put myself exactly.
Okay.
But I think I would end up on the traditional side of things simply because I'm unaware of many trends.
Okay.
Lots of stuff I do does align with what's cool and whatnot, but I think
you're
it has
just cool.
Yeah. Okay. It has more to do with coincidence and my own uniqueness that may align with trendsetting occasionally than it does with being any awareness or intentionality.
Okay. So we're going to, I'm going to be honest here. We're going to just straight up call people out on some stuff here. You know, I did this before we started taping where I said, I saw you the other day at work walking around in a poncho. That's which true. You were owning it, so I appreciate that. Mm-hmm. That was good. But now today we've completely flipped the script and you have got a kind of a hoodie, like almost a lumberjack flannel kind of thing with a fleece hood. Your t-shirt, okay, I'm giving you credit for your t-shirt, though, because it's a dinosaur vibe. Is that like a T-Rex or what is it?
It's Godzilla.
Oh, it's Godzilla. Yeah. Okay. Before I saw what was on there, I thought you were rocking like the truck stop vibe of like those wolf t-shirts that like glow in the dark. Those are awesome. Okay. So anyway, but either way, you're on point, and so I appreciate that. Georgia, talk to us.
Well, like a classic trendy person, I would have to say that you can't put me in a box. And I think that I'm equally trendy, and also I have parts that are traditional. I think that's just me.
Okay.
I guess I would be.
You could see that I'm already thinking of what I'm going to say in response.
I will say I do think that if you asked anyone in the office, they would probably put me in the box of like, oh, she's pretty trendy. She's up with the trends. She knows what's going on, and I don't think there's anything wrong with that.
Okay. So here, I'm going to ask you this as a follow-up, and then we'll get to Grace, but then everyone can kind of answer after the fact. But when you're talking about trends, do you see a trend come up and you're like, that trend is awesome? Like, how do you jump on the bandwagon of something that you would say is like, I'm so glad that this was brought to my attention because this is amazing?
Okay, I'll give you a perfect example.
Please.
Okay, over the summer, I started seeing some of the influencers that I follow, fashion influencers that I follow, and they're micro influencers, okay?
Okay.
Started seeing them wearing skirts and dresses over jeans again, which died in the early 2000s, but has been brought back in a very cute and fun and tasteful way. And so I started wearing dresses over jeans again over the summer and during the fall time, and it was a slay.
Okay. That's very interesting that you say that, because I would say, I don't know about the 2000s, but I would say that those died in about fifth grade when you stopped flipping around on the monkey bars. But we're going to get back to that. I was like, okay, I mean, I definitely know kids do that, but that's very interesting. Okay, Grace, go ahead.
So I would say I, when was asked, I'm definitely more traditional. Okay. But as I was thinking about it, I love, like, I've always been classic style. So yeah. Like Emma Roberts in Nancy Drew, 2007, 2008.
Oh, yeah.
She was so classic. And 7-year-old me was like, I'm dressing like her. I'm dressing like I go to prep school. I go to a public school, but I'm going to dress like her. So, but the classic style is kind of coming back. And it's kind of trendy.
Clean girl look.
Yeah. So I'm sitting here like, maybe I am, you know, more trendy. But, you know, I love movies. I love TV shows. It's kind of hard to have a, and you want to be winsome in the culture, but not be, you know, of the world. So.
Yeah. And case in point, because this is audio, y'all need to know that Grace is like wearing basically a twin set. Like she's got her little cardigan on and is very, you know, you just need like a pleated skirt or something. That's awesome. You're with it. And the trends are starting even now. Okay. So I'm going to say, I don't even know what I'm going to say. I would say I'm pretty traditional in the sense of I know what I like. I definitely know. I'm going to go to like home kind of stuff. I'll stay out of fashion. Home kind of stuff. I will like what I see. Like if I see something I like, I know it. But I'm not someone that has to curate all this stuff. I'm gonna pull out. I know this gets weird sometimes, but Enneagram 4s. I literally don't understand you. Okay, because this need to always be so unique. I'm like, if I find a sweater I like at Costco, I will buy it in 3 colors and I'm totally okay with that. And if I see a coworker wearing the same sweater, I'm like, isn't that a great sweater? So I don't know. I don't think that makes me very trendy necessarily, except that I jump on the bandwagon of good sweaters. But okay, so let's go ahead. Let's talk about why we look around at stuff, why we follow certain trends, what it looks like how some of these things even come about, and even in our friend circles, like how they affect how we relate to others or even the conversations we have. How does that play out for you guys?
Okay, well, I would like to first say anything that you wear, anything in your house, whatever it is, everything started out as a trend. That trend may have passed. Mm-hmm. But it started out that way. Mm-hmm. And so I think the reason that we like trends or the reason that we hop on trends is because it is popular. And I think inherently our minds go to the popular. I don't think that that's necessarily a good thing or a bad thing. I think that there are some things like oversized sweaters with jeans. I'm into it. Mm-hmm. And I know it is trendy, mm-hmm. but I'm into it. I think it's just one of those things where if there is something trending that you enjoy, I don't think that there's really anything wrong with finding the parts of it that you enjoy or parts of it that you want to incorporate into your personal style or into your personal life. Another good one, I guess, is Stanley Cups. You can come for us if you want, but you know what? They fit into my car cup holder and I don't care. And I drink so much more water because of it. So thank you, Stanley. Mm-hmm. So I think it's just finding the things that you like and want to incorporate and finding why do you like it? Like, what about it is interesting to you? And I think as far as like friend groups or how that fits in with friends, I think it doesn't really have to, I guess. Like, I have a lot of friends that are very different than me and do not dress the same way that I dress or do not talk the same way that I talk or use the same kind of lingo. But I think what's fun about it is just seeing how you change based off of the friends that you have and the kind of trends that they follow and how it becomes incorporated into your lifestyle and vice versa. Like, I think that's just a cool part of the human condition is like the way that we kind of imprint on one another and how we shift and change by the people that we surround ourselves with.
Yeah, and I think for me, I'm such a sponge, so I have to be really mindful of, like, I'll start to talk. You know, if you've got a little bit of a drawl, I'll start to talk like you. I'll start, you know, just different things like that. So having since I, you know, started to follow Jesus, I talk differently, I dress differently, the things I watch are different, the things that the movies, the TV shows, different things, like everything about me has slowly changed, and making sure that that's the sponge. That's what I'm sponging off of, I guess, and not my peers so much, but at the same time, like, because the microtrends, I find it very exhausting. The constant turnover, and it's probably social media and different things, but it's just feels like something's the new thing is very cool, and I've got to adjust, and then those shoes aren't cool anymore. You know, that's not, I'm not, that's not what everybody's wearing anymore.
Or things that are bigger commitments. Like, again, I was talking about home trends. I just saw another Instagram influencer, a design guy, who was like, all of you who painted your kitchens all gray, that's totally out now. And I'm like, and out come the paint cans, and everyone's going to redo their kitchen. But you eventually have to decide whether or not you like it. And it doesn't have to be just because it's a trend. I mean, if we followed every influencer and everything they were telling us to do, we'd never have any personal opinions generally. So, you know, I think you do have to decide, like, okay, am I in or am I out on this? And what does that look like? So, yeah. How about you, Sterling?
I latched on to part of what Georgia said at the beginning about what you like is influenced by whatever is trendy at the time you decide you like that. So I'm not keeping up on the trends for sure, but the things that I like were trendy when I decided, oh man, I like this thing. I have long hair as a man, and I know that was bigger, like early 2000s. And that's when I decided, oh man, I'm seeing Aragorn on screen in Lord of the Rings. I'm seeing Star Wars Episode II, Ewan McGregor's long Jedi mullet. Like, that seems cool to me. And then that made a decision for the rest of my life of what I'm going to like. And that has come and gone and come and gone back and forth, as all things do. And it's just part of the cycle. How closely you follow the cycle can be variant person to person, and may help in defining whether you're trending or not. But
yeah. Are there any things that you remember historically, or they could even be current, where you're like, I don't know, I kind of question that. Like, why, how did that even come about? Why this maybe wasn't a good idea for anyone? I mean, a lot of people classically will say like the mullet or something like that, you know, but what would be other examples of things where you're like, I feel like this came and went pretty fast and probably for a good reason.
When I was younger, definitely the really baggy workman jeans with the little hammer loop on the leg. Okay. That was just the coolest thing I could possibly wear when I was in third grade, fourth grade. And that has passed.
Yeah. I haven't. Okay, this is not that, but it's making me remember the guys who, you know, and definitely just more the urban, like, rap vibe and stuff of just the pants straight up around your knees and how they kept them on. I just am hearing, like, every grandma right now being like, oh, my gosh, those pants hanging down around their pants. Mm. Yeah.
I was going to say, I think maximalism. Did I say that? Maximalism. That. I think that was a trend that died right during COVID. And I think that one, for me, I'm glad it died, because I think, again, I don't think all trends are bad. Like, it's like, if you like it and if and you can afford to do those things and you want to, I say go for it. But I do think maximalism on the whole was problematic, because it really bought into, you have to buy all of this stuff to be trendy, or you have to have your whole house pink and blue and purple and yellow and just every color that you could possibly do. And it was a really big trend architecturally. Oh, tough word. And it was also a big trend as far as fashion. And so people were wearing a lot of different clothing pieces, and that is a little more unattainable. And I think when trends become only attainable for the elite, that's when it's like, okay, that's, you know, super problematic, because then it continues this spiral into elitism in, you know, in our country and just the world in general. So anyway, I think I'm glad that that trend died, and it died right around COVID. And I think rightfully so, because people started to realize, they were like, okay, this is not sustainable, and it's not making me happy to have all of these things.
Yeah, I've always been such a hater. So if anti-bandwagon, which I realize is not, you can, there's good things about that, maybe marching to the beat of your own drummer, but also, like, you don't want to kind of get on your high horse about everything all the time. And that was me for a long time. So I can't think of the last time really that I've jumped on a trend. If I see something popular, I'm like, Yeah, no. I'm going to go the other way. But silly bands. That was, what was that, 2010? That was a big deal for me. My circulation's probably better for it. But that trend died. But yeah, try not to be as much of a hater.
One thing that's always stymied me is when people, like, I understand trends and like the aesthetic of things, or this is just a cool item. But when it's so often specifically tied to a brand, like brands of things, like, you know, Georgia brought up the Stanley Cup, like, okay, well, I'm pretty sure probably Walmart has random cups that fit in cup holders and whatever. Or, you know,
it's like, but it's not the Stanley, Lisa.
I have all the info. Well, that's my point. It's like, why does it have to be a Stanley? Or, you know, back in the day, it was like the Moleskin planners were all big, you know. Oh, yeah. And I'm like, anyone can grab a lined notebook and write in it.
The decomposition. Just as well.
Exactly. Or it's something to that point of like, no, this is like super eco-friendly, or this is sustainable, or this is, and there's going to be some little qualification or characteristic of it that makes it something. I mean, I've been, you know, walked in cities. I've been in Hong Kong. I've been in Vegas or whatever, where people are lining outside of like Dolce & Gabbana or Louis Vuitton or whatever, because that name is so important. And that is just, it's very mind-boggling to me, the need for that kind of name around something. I mean, again, some names really speak quality, and I understand that you know you're getting quality for something. But yeah, just the idea of following in particular designers on things has always been kind of interesting to me. I don't know.
I think it makes sense only because if you want to get down to the deep theologicalness of this, I think it's because we crave to follow something big and important. And ultimately, we're following God. And I think on the small level, when you have these things that make you feel important, or that you have and are made by somebody quote-unquote important, I think it fills this, you know, earthly part of our cup that we're like, man, it feels good to be a part of what everybody else is a part of, because, you know, it makes you feel like you're a part of something bigger when you attain something that everybody else has attained as well, if that makes any sense. Mm-hmm. Like, I feel like that is, to me, not a struggle so much where I'm like, oh, I'm putting my idolatry in this. But I'm just like, I think it's a struggle in that I'm like, yeah, there's this earthly part of me that I'm like, yeah, you know what? I like attaining things. Mm-hmm. I like the idea of that, like, someday I could own all of these different tennis shoes. Like, I am a sneakerhead in my mind. Mm-hmm. I cannot afford the sneakers that I want because they are expensive. Mm-hmm. But I am a sneakerhead in my mind because I'm like, oh, that'd be so cool if I could just have a rack just like Billie Eilish of like every tennis shoe I want. And I know why I want those things. And I think ultimately, like, if you know why you want those things, I think that's the most important part. Just like our inbox listener that had the question, I think it's being self-aware about that. And I think if you're self-aware about the fact that the reason I want these things is because there's an earthly part of me that wants to be a part of everything and feel like I've attained something, I think as long as you know that and turn that to God, that's where, like, being a part of trends, you know, I think if you know that about yourself, then it's okay. As long as you're not falling into that and spiraling and snowballing into, like, I need to buy all of this to be important.
Yeah. Which is so interesting because, again, talking about trendiness, a huge trend is minimalism, you know, which is, again, the opposite of that. It seems like there's always something reactionary to something that's going on. And Georgia, to your point, and not to totally set up an idol for you, so I apologize in advance, but my nephew long worked for a couture store in Atlanta, and he had, like, rappers in his clientele who would, when a new line of, like, Gucci tennis shoe or whatever came out, they're like, I want this in these four or five colors, and he would have to get them and ship them and stuff. Mm-hmm. And I mean, it's like $5,000 a pair or something. I mean, come on. Like, what, you know? So then you have the minimalists who are like, oh, you
but
guys,
even minimalism, even minimalism is still like, there's minimalist
the idolatry.
Well, yeah, because then you're like, oh, well, because I don't have a lot of this stuff. That's the thing. At the end of the day, you have to be self-aware of, like, why you like to do these things and to not to put it on a pedestal.
Yeah.
And minimalism too, like, I would argue, like, you still have to buy stuff to become minimalist.
Yeah.
Because I know all these minimalist influencers who are like, but I have this, and that was able, I, because I have this special box that's really cute and minimalist, I can put all of my junk in that box. And it's like, no, you know what I mean? So it's like, minimalism,
yeah,
still a trend.
And the box only cost me $650.
Exactly.
Yeah. So
plain white.
Yeah. So just kind of in our last minute here, any final thoughts to that point of like how we check our own hearts, whether we're on the, you know, as Grace brought up, the judgy side of like, you know, well, I could tell you what you should be like, and here's what maturity is or whatever. This is how you should be. Or the other side of excess and just recognizing that you do kind of fall prey to a lot of the stuff that's going on. What does that look like for you in just kind of guarding yourself?
I think for me, it's been asking the Lord, like, hey, is this good for me? I can watch this show. I can watch this movie. I can participate in these things. For me, it's shows and movies. Mm-hmm. But it's like, is this building me up? And the same thing we talked about these big trends or these big companies that make the newest, greatest thing. Is this where I need to put my dollars? Mm-hmm. And I think as Christians, we've got to be careful about where we put our dollars. Everybody does. So,
yeah. And I'm glad you actually brought up, you know, TV and movies and stuff, because that's a very big source of FOMO, in the sense of if someone's binging something and you're not in on the conversation because you have not watched it, you can feel this angst around like, well, I better catch up, or I better, you know, I feel like that all the time. I feel like, where did this show come from? Like, how is everyone watching this now? I'm still catching up on XYZ from 3 years ago, whatever. So how about you, Sterling?
I think it's about asking yourself, where do I get my sense of belonging? Mm-hmm. Do I belong to a brand, or do I belong to an idea or a value? And I appropriated this philosophy from our mutual friend, Ryan Wall. He said something that I really, really liked. He said, you don't give yourself over to be like a fan of brands and say, oh, I just like this phone company and I only buy that phone. Or I only like these sneakers because, like, oh, the company's so great. I want to belong to this community of a brand. It's far better for you to pick an idea or a value that you believe in, and then find the companies that espouse that, and then go with that brand. And like, you're still endorsing a brand, but it's because of what they believe and what they're furthering rather than just who they are. Mm-hmm. And so that really helps me kind of limit what trends suck me in and what don't. Mm-hmm. So that it's not becoming a sense of belonging for me. It's not replacing God, which anything that does becomes an idol, even if it's innocent belonging, air quotes.
Mm-hmm. Great, great point. And good thing for us to land on and think about, because I think we could, you know, fill in the blank of what it is. Is it entertainment? Is it clothes? Is it stuff? Is it decor? Is it items? Is it, you know, whatever. I think it's, you know, we can all be trapped by that in different ways. So thanks, you guys, for weighing in. Appreciate it.
Thanks for having us.
Cold day in a London cab, her phone rings. But I can tell the news is bad before the first tear falls. No one wants the sorrow a call like this brings. The sorrow doesn't get the last word after all.
Hey everyone, welcome to this week's culture segment. I don't know about you, if you are ready for the Oscars. I know the last few years for me have been a little puzzling because I feel like movies have gotten so crazy, like obscure and artsy and whatever. They're like not the ones that I watch. So some of them I make intentionally the effort to watch them, and so I can be in the know, because you know I'm just always in the know. But that said, fortunately, we can have a bigger conversation around this because we have our friends from Plugged In, Adam and Paul. Hey, guys.
Hello. Hey, Lisa.
So good to have you here, Adam Holtz and Paul Acey, for those of you who don't know. Many of you do know because you guys, as Boundless fans, still go to Plugged In, even though we know you don't always want to be told what to do and what you should be consuming, but you like the freedom of checking it out for yourself. And so we have a lot of fans, you guys, here in the Boundless sphere of Plugged In. And we'll make sure that we link to Plugged In, and we're going to tell you about some of the things they have going on. But that said, we want to have a conversation around the value of entertainment. Like, is that, I mean, am I even saying something that's possible in the same phrase here? Is entertainment valuable? If you ask my mom and dad, they'd be like, no, it's Satan's work. So, but they're with Jesus now, so we're good. So we're going to talk about this, prompted by several conversations that we have had around, in fact, the fact that you guys are now maybe reviewing some older movies, trying to add some, like, hey, let's reach back into the vault and not forget things that have happened in the past. I mean, I'm not going to say that's, you know, age. No age assumptions being made here on that front.
No assumptions.
What I think is shocking is people, like, in our audience are like, yeah, I watched a classic from, like, 2004.
Oh,
and I'm like, wow.
Speed.
Yeah, exactly. It's like, well, I really reached back into that. So, okay. So, but before we get started, we have a lot of newer listeners, and I need to make sure that they know about Plugged In. So can someone just give us an idea of what Plugged In is? And then I would like to know kind of uniquely what you two each do for the site, because that's kind of fun, because it's similar and different.
It is similar and different. Plugged In is focused on the family's media review website. We have been around in various forms, evolving forms, since 1991. Mm-hmm. PluggedIn.com launched in 1999, and we went web only in 2009. The print publication went away. Mm-hmm. Our primary purpose is to help those who come to the site have the information they need to make good decisions about their entertainment choices. So we definitely are aimed at parents, but we also recognize there are lots of people who aren't parents who are using Plugged In. So we want to do two things. We want to equip you with the right information. You know, if you heard something about Oppenheimer and you want to know, is there stuff in Oppenheimer that I want to know about before I go see it, because everybody says it's really interesting. Yeah, there is stuff in Oppenheimer you want to know about. But at a deeper level, we think about entertainment as an expression of discipleship, that our faith should intersect with the kind of choices we're making entertainment-wise. And I hope, and I'm going to speak for Paul here, I think that we both hope that you not only get that information about why Oppenheimer may or may not be the best choice, but deeper thoughts about everything we review.
Yeah, you know, one of the things that we do, we're probably best known for our movie reviews, right? Mm. But we do TV and books and music and video games, and we talk a lot about technology on our blog. So we have all these little different facets. And just to sort of echo what Adam was saying is we do try to go a little bit deeper. We know that a lot of people come because they want to know, oh my goodness, is there going to be a scene that I'm going to have to be worried about? How many swear words are in this? And we will tell you that. Mm-hmm. But we do, you know, I sort of go under the template that when we talk about the stories that impact us, they are complex things because the storytellers are complex. We are all created by God. Mm-hmm. And because of that, the stories that resonate with us have a little bit of that beauty, that glory baked in. But we are all fallen creatures. And so a lot of almost all of our stories are fallen as well. They have real serious issues that we need to navigate. And so we just kind of try to separate those for both our readers and really honestly for us as we go through these entertainment options.
Okay. So are you guys generalists or specialists? I think you guys each kind of have your areas of interest or expertise in a sense.
Well, we've both been here. I've been here a little over 20 years now, and Paul's not too far behind me.
Paul, no, don't mention that, though. That's
right.
makes me feel old.
Paul is the superhero specialist. I am probably the Star Wars specialist. For some reason, I get lots of Christian movies. I'm not sure 100% why that is. You get really gritty dramas.
I get the really gritty indie stuff that
I do
you
sometimes
don't like.
Too, though.
Okay.
Yeah.
Yes, exactly.
That you've never heard of before.
Where I'm like,
it's often
why
in a foreign language,
this?
It seems, these days.
We really are sort of generalists and specialists, right? Because I think that we all we all gravitate toward certain stories, right? I'm not going to be the best person to necessarily review a rom-com. Mm-hmm. I'm not going to be necessarily
because you're neither
person.
Rom nor com.
I am neither. Yes, that is very true. But superheroes, I know my superheroes mm-hmm. fairly well, and so that's kind of fun to do, and, mm-hmm. and we gravitate toward our interests. And I do think that our interests overlap. One of the beautiful things about our job is the conversations that we get to have about it, you know? So our interests overlap enough where we can talk about the things that we see. Yeah. We can sort of unpack the difficulties that we find in a given movie. And I think that that's one of the funnest parts of my job.
Yeah.
Well, and we often have people who gently compliment / slightly tease you a little bit about your ability to find spiritual messages in anything, really. Yeah. You know, it could be a documentary on bowling, but you're finding messages about
movie.
Perseverance and, you know, all of these spiritual themes. And I think that we do, one of the things that we want to do is we want to give credit where credit is due. And so sometimes we'll get crit from people who say, I can't even believe you found a positive theme in X. Mm-hmm. And, you know, we're living in this echo chamber where everything gets boiled down to, you know, a short tweet or whatever they're called these days, where mm-hmm. it's either this or this. And I hope that when people come to Plugged In, what they experience with our reviews is nuance. Mm-hmm. We're certainly going to point out the things that are problematic, mm-hmm. but I hope that we do that in a way that is also fair to what somebody's created, even if we're ultimately critical of either the content or the worldview.
Yeah. Okay, so give me an idea before we get into this conversation around valuable entertainment. How many, just an estimate, how many movies and shows would you say you each watch in any given year for work?
Ooh, so
Paul watches all of them.
I don't watch all of them, but I do watch a lot. I think last year I watched close to 100 movies probably not quite as many shows, but probably about 70 TV shows during for my job.
That's a lot.
Adam has a lot of extra responsibilities. He talks on interviews and all that sort of stuff. So I actually try to. I do most of the assigning, so I try to keep his own reviewing slate a little bit lighter.
Okay.
Yeah, and I, because I have been here, I'm sort of the last man standing. I guess maybe you are. Never mind. It doesn't really work. I'm also kind of a pinch hitter because I've done almost everything at some point. So sometimes we just need somebody, hey, we have a hole here. We need to fill this in. I've got some relationships with different Christian studios. So sometimes I'm the one who does those movies because they send me screeners. So
well, and honestly, you joked a little bit about how you're typically the person who sees Christian movies, but you see them because you're really good at them, right?
You're kind.
You are able to see a lot of the theological nuances within the stories that other people might miss.
Yeah.
You're able to see kind of the heart behind some of these movies. So you really are effective in that way. So we do tend to push a lot of certain things. Mm-hmm. Adam's way. He's also a big Dune fan. He didn't get to review Dune 2 this time, but, you know.
Oh, well.
He didn't get assigned.
Yeah, we did Sorry. Almost 600 radio interviews last year.
Yeah.
So that's a big chunk of what we do. But I think, you know, we have a team of five. We're not a big team, but we work very hard. And I would say on any given week, we'll typically do anywhere from 4 to 8 or 9 or 10 movies. And we'll typically do around 6 TV shows a week, give or take, you know, and there are weeks and seasons where it's more than that. But it works out to about 225 movies as a whole mm-hmm. for Plugged In a year and probably about 300 TV shows.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think that's about right.
Okay. All right. Well, let's talk a little bit about utilizing entertainment for good. This sounds like I'm like we're going to, speaking of superheroes, we're going to use this for good. But even thinking, you know, where we would tread in Boundless is like, hey, you're going to go out on a date Friday night. You could just go and like watch a movie and then, you know, hang out afterwards or whatever. Or you could actually have a meaningful conversation mm-hmm. off of watching a movie that actually has some content that maybe deals with themes that are important. Maybe it has some historic elements or it's just straight up up a, you know, historical film or documentary. Let's talk a little bit about that, because I think, you know, hearkening back again to my parents, love you guys, you know, very much like there is nothing
they're
redeeming
right
in
now.
Entertainment.
They may or may
they're
not totally cool.
They're watching
podcast.
Some movie they never watched before, I'm sure. But not thinking there are redeeming elements. And, you know, we've talked before on the show here about, like, everyone has their triggers and some, you know, where you should steer clear because it's going to bring up something, or it's just, or something is just trash. And, like, why would you invest the time? But let's talk about what are some things that could actually prompt good conversation, specifically in maybe in movies, you know, in that sense, like ways that you can kind of enter into that with a little more of a thoughtful process behind it.
Well, I think every movie has a worldview. And in fact, I would say every bit of created entertainment is telling a story. And even a commercial during the Super Bowl, well, maybe especially during the Super Bowl, they're telling stories, right? And they are trying to persuade you in some way. And storytellers may or may not have something that they're trying to persuade you toward, but they are telling a story that reflects a perspective that
sometimes
that
many perspectives,
and sometimes many perspectives. And so I think at the most basic level, the best teacher I ever had in college was my Shakespeare professor. And she started every conversation about every play we looked at with the question, what's going on here? And I think it's a great question to say, okay, what's the point of this story? And then I think that we can move into deeper questions of who did I identify with, and how did the story work on me emotionally or not?
One of the really interesting things about the entertainment field as a whole and what we do is that so much of it is not only about what the storyteller is trying to convey, but you as the viewer, what you bring to the party. I think if the three of us went to see, I don't know, one of the big Oscar movies, the
Barbie.
Holdovers. Barbie. Barbie is a great example, actually. Yeah. We would see, I think, three really different movies. Mm-hmm. And because of that, we need to pay attention to what resonates with us in those movies and actually seek out, I think, people who might have seen the same movie and have conversations with them. Because I really believe that the beauty of story, the beauty of entertainment is really found not in the entertainment itself, especially, it's in the conversations that you get to have with people, how they reacted, how they felt, what it made them think about. Some of my favorite moments working here at Plugged In have just been talking with Adam about a movie that we've virulently disagreed about.
Right.
You know?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
So give me to that point, because I want to talk a little bit about the difference then and now with movies, if collectively things have changed, if as a whole, the way movies are done are different now, because I know you guys, like, and again, when I think of old movies, I'm thinking of like black and whites, but we literally can go back to, like, let's say the 90s even, okay? Ancient history for most of our audience, but okay. But I would love to know what for each of you, you know, hot take, is a movie that profoundly affected you? To the point where you still think about it, or you can still watch it and feel like something about your perspective changed, you were emotionally touched, your opinion was changed on something.
Oh boy.
I want to hear something big.
Wow, that's a great question.
That's why
you're a pro.
That's right. And that's why Paul's going first, because he's already
talking. Oh my goodness. So I would probably say, there's a lot of movies that would fall under this for me, and they would fall under it in different ways. But the one that immediately comes to mind would probably be Martin Scorsese's Silence. Mm. That was an R-rated movie. It has some very difficult scenes in it because it talks a little bit about these Christian missionaries who go into Japan during the 1600s, 1700s, when Japan was starting to throw out and kill any Christian missionaries who were there. It was a powerful, powerful movie that makes you think. You might go in there with some very strong feelings about whether you like the movie or not, but for a Christian, if you walk out of there and you're not thinking, I would be surprised, because it's very provocative. It challenges you in what you believe, what you think is the right thing to do under certain circumstances. It was a very, very powerful movie.
I find that the movies that affect me the most deeply are movies about friendships and relationships between men. Mm-hmm. And I'm sometimes caught off guard. And so I'm going to talk about a movie that is not a great movie. And is a movie that was rated R mostly for language and drinking. I can't remember. There may have been a little bit of sexual content. And it's a silly movie because you're going to be like, dude, really? And that's A Perfect Storm. Hmm. And it's based on a true story about some fishermen in Massachusetts who know that there's a nor'easter coming in. They've had a horrible fishing season, but there are rumors that, you know, just a ways out, the fish are going crazy. And it's Mark Wahlberg and George Clooney, two guys that I like against my will. I don't want to admit that I like them, but you see their movies and you're like—
People compare us to them all the time.
Yeah.
They do. They do, and Siskel and Ebert. But, you know, what I found happened to me, and this can happen in a movie, is that it will tap into an emotion, and you're not even sure why you're responding the way you are.
Yeah.
Because— It's about a bunch of guys who know that there's a pretty good chance that they're not coming back. And in fact, they don't. Spoiler warning. Mm-hmm. You know, they take off and head into the storm and that's it. Mm-hmm. They're gone. But it was a movie about these guys saying, we are going for it. We know the risk. We're in it together. And it was kind of a Band of Brothers-ish thing. Even though it wasn't a war movie, it had that kind of war movie vibe that we know there's a risk here, but we are willing to risk it all for the sake of this potential reward. Mm-hmm. And if men are sometimes criticized for being passive, you know, these are men who are actively seizing their destiny to a fault because we know before they leave that they're not coming back and that they're kind of total morons, right? But I just, so here's what happened. I got done watching it and I just started weeping. And it wasn't because the ending was a surprise. But it was, there was something about those men that they had each other's back, that they were brothers. I'm like, there's something spiritual going on there for me, even though the movie wasn't spiritual at all, which gets to what you were talking about.
Well, and like you say, we all bring these things to the movie, right? And for me, I am really pulled toward family movies, you know, father-son relationships, father-daughter relationships. I tell you what, there have been some times when I've been sitting in a movie trying to take notes and, you know, tears are streaming down my face and I'm trying to see the paper as I'm writing. It's very awkward. But
And then we get letters from people saying, you missed this part.
You missed
and you're
this
like, well, I was crying.
I was weeping. Give me a break. But you do think about, like, Finding Nemo. As light and as silly and as fun as that is, it gets to me all the time.
Or
the
up.
Idea of this, oh, well, Up. Oh, my goodness. Up is probably one of my favorite movies of all time, and I think it's because of the first opening 10-15 minutes. Yeah. If you are not crying by the end of that first opening sequence and Up, you have a heart of stone.
Yeah, what are you even doing? That's a great point. Okay, well, let's talk a little bit about movies, the value of young adults maybe considering movies that are a little bit older, because I want to kind of get to some of your, you know, maybe a couple favorites here, or maybe just why there's a vibe around movies that, you know, some of it, is it just nostalgia where we feel, you know, everyone has their movie where they're like, oh, you know, whether it's Sunny, Sit Down, because you need to watch this movie that I watched when I was a teenager. I'm not a parent, so I can't say that, but I feel like you dads would say that. But just kind of that idea around the way things were created, the way, you know, even though we've said now there are great movies that are being made now too, but let's talk a little bit about the value of looking back a little bit.
So I would say that there's a few different points that I'd want to make. One, historical movies, you know, older movies, they give you some insight into the culture as a whole. Mm-hmm. You can sort of see the world in which your parents grew up, the world in which your grandparents grew up. They talk a lot about values. Whenever you look at a movie from a particular time frame, you can see what the culture valued. And when you look at older movies, you might be surprised at some of the terrible things that were valued back then.
Like even in great movies, like It's a Wonderful Life, everybody smokes all the way through it.
Yeah.
And we don't see that today.
Right. Exactly. Exactly. So that would be the very first thing that I would point out. I also think that there is, and this is going to sound like I'm a really old man, but there—
It's all relative.
there is truly, in some ways, there are some really great movies being made, right? The superhero movies from the 1970s were nothing compared to the way they are now. But there are also movies that were just, frankly, better back then. You look at musicals, for instance. La La Land was a really fun movie. But when I watched it, you couldn't help but think about, man, this is so much worse than a Singin' in the Rain or something. Mm-hmm. When you look at the aesthetic quality of an old 1950s musical, they just don't do it as well.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's exactly right. And I think that you have to sort of understand that when we go back and watch older movies, the aesthetics are going to be different. One of the things I notice is that the camera shots are much longer. Mm-hmm. And so they can feel boring. Like it can be like, you know, this thing isn't moving very fast. I remember we watched Mary Poppins as a family a while back, and there's one dance scene that goes for like 15 minutes and the camera never moves. And so I think if you at least understand that we're used to these quick cuts, that's an aesthetic difference with storytelling today. It helps you understand why they were made that way. But when you encounter an old movie that has dialogue and characters that just absolutely pop. I remember when I saw Casablanca the first time, it blew my mind how great this story was. And I'm like, okay, there are things that I have missed because I've had a prejudice against
black
old
and white
movies or black and white movies. And there are movies that are not just good movies for the time. They have stood the test of time because it's a great story, it's great writing, and it's great characters.
Another thing that I'd like to point out is that old movies give us a chance for connection, right? This is a theme that I tend to come back to again and again. Entertainment provides an avenue for connection. And when we engage with older movies, we form a connection point with people who might be older than us, you know, our grandparents, our parents. We are able to, when we're watching movies that are made for kids, it gives us a connection point with those kids. You know, I think that we all love to talk about the movies we see, the television shows we're watching, to know a little bit about them, to be able to engage with conversation. It allows us to draw closer to those people. And not only can some of those stories give us avenues to talk about deeper, more important issues, but just the closeness that is fostered with those connections can foster deeper connections.
Yeah, that's so good. Okay, so because we're out of time, this is so ridiculous how we run out of time, you guys just need to give quick and dirty a couple recommendations for a 20-something who's listening who may not have seen this movie. So Adam, do not even mention Star Wars. We're not even talking about Go deeper than that.
I won't go much deeper than that.
Okay. We'll have to talk about Star Wars offline.
Yes.
My opinions. Okay. Just give us a couple recs because people are going to go into the weekend. They need to know what you're thinking.
I'm going to start with The Secret Life of Walter Mitty, which I think was 2013 or 14.
Oh, yeah, that's a great one. It's not too old, but...
It's not too old, which stars Ben Stiller as a guy who works for Life magazine. He works in the kind of, he keeps track of their archives, and he has this imaginative, almost James Bondian sort of fantasy life. And it turns out that a negative for the last magazine goes missing, and he has to go on an adventure that takes him to Iceland. It is a lovely movie, and I have to confess that I have never been a huge Ben Stiller fan. It's an amazing movie about his character growth over the course of 2 hours, and it's PG. There's not very much content in it. And my other recommendation is actually a movie that's aimed a little bit younger, but I think could have a lot of resonance for young adults. It's called A Monster Calls. And it's came out in 2017. It's about a young boy whose mom is dying of cancer. And every night this tree comes and talks to him, and it's imaginative, but it really is about navigating grief. And I would say of the things I've seen in the last 10 years, it would be top two or three.
Mm. Wow.
So even though I think it would be a sort of a young adult-ish movie, you know, by young adult, they mean like 15-year-olds. But but I think it's a movie that you could watch in your 20s or 30s and really – It sort of plumbs the depth of grief.
Yeah, yeah. Let me just echo Secret Life of Walter Mitty. That was a movie that didn't make a ton of money at the box office. But man, I don't know if there was another movie that impacted me as deeply the year that it came out. I had a chance to review it.
Yeah.
And it just was really cool. I am going to go a little bit more shallow than Mr. Holtz here.
Okay.
And I am going to say, you know what? Really, if you haven't seen Singing in the Rain, I think that's a must watch because it really is just a delightful, fun movie. And when you watch the performances there, the dancing that you see, the singing that you see, you just see kind of a lost art form. There's a song, Moses Supposes, some of the moves that they do, and that is just incredible. And you know, I'll just say, if you haven't seen Up, I think it might be one of the most brilliant movies to come along in the last 20 years. It is just beautiful and so rich and so deep. And one of the things that we sometimes look at, and I think we can make this error, especially when we're younger, is that we look at some of these movies that are made for kids and think, oh, that's not for me. I am not going to go see that. When you look at some of these movies, they have messages that are as resonant, emotions that are as deep, characters that are as complex as anything you see in adult cinema. Up is just fantastic.
Awesome. Great recommendations, you guys. Good job.
Also The Meg.
Oh, okay.
No, oh, my goodness.
Also Beverly Hills Chihuahua.
Right.
The Last Jedi.
Because sometimes Big you just want to have fun and, you know, Jason Statham blowing up a big shark. That's fun.
There you have it. Oh, you guys, thank you so much. How fun is that? Okay. You guys, I need you to know that we have a resource for you this week. In addition to linking to Plugged In and giving you guys all the info of what is going on there, I want you to know that for a gift of any amount to Boundless this week, we are making available the brand new, just released book by these dudes and their team titled Becoming a Screen Savvy Family, How to Navigate a Media-Saturated World and Why We Should. And those of you who are like, I don't have a family. Hello, you are in a family. And quite frankly, just read it. And you know what? This is a great thing to give even as a gift to like friends, family members, siblings, whatever, who have kids or whatever and need to have this conversation. But it's just great for all of us to jump in and really get some thought behind the media that we consume. And so you're going to go to boundless.org, just search for 840. That is this week's episode. You'll see the book cover there. You just click on it. You give a gift to Boundless for the work that we're already doing and you love as part of our family. And we will go ahead and send you a complimentary copy of this book as our thank you to you for that gift. So super awesome. And so we'll see you guys again sometime in the future. We'll bring you back and have the conversation. So thanks again.
It was great. Thank you so much.
Yeah, thanks, Lisa.
You got the whole world in your hands. Got the whole wide world in your hands. And every little thing is under your command. So I will trust your plans. You've got the whole world in your hands. Hardest thing, it's a constant fight in a world that moves at the speed of life to slow the chaos down. But slowing on down is the only way I'll ever hear what you have to say. I need to hear you now. Cause you've got all of this figured out. You've got the whole world in your hands. Got the whole wide world in your hands. Trust your plans. You've got the whole world in your hands. You've got the whole world in your hands.
All right. Well, as we finish out the show, we will open up our inbox for a question this week that is nicely positioned about friendship, and specifically someone calling out themselves on a great growth topic that I think we can all go after. So fortunately, we have Counselor Carrie here. Hey, Carrie, great to have you.
Thanks, Lisa.
It is super fun when you come to weigh in. And we were talking about how you're so grateful for just a fun topic. I was going to say a girly topic, but I don't want to say that because guys, you need to learn about this too. Mm-hmm. Okay, so that's just my caveat here. So let's go ahead and jump into what she says. She says, in a lot of my friendships, I feel that I talk more than my other girlfriends. We'll go out to lunch or coffee, and I feel like I talk, but I don't get to hear from them about what's going on in their lives. I want to learn more about my friends and grow closer to them. How can I practice asking good questions and listening to my friends?
Yeah, so I appreciated this question because I think it's something we all have to be really aware of. And that's good self-awareness that this listener is asking. So it sounds like she's really already noticed that she has a pattern of dominating the conversation, and she's just looking for maybe some practical next steps for how to do that differently. So one thing I thought of right away was good self-talk. And this is something I have to practice as someone who also can go into social situations and have a tendency to dominate the conversation. And I mean, in the psychological world, self-talk is about how you might criticize yourself, but I use it more as a way to kind of calm myself and prepare myself. It's that internal dialogue I have with myself that says, oh, I think I'm in a monologue right now. How can I get out of that? So one thing I think would be helpful is to think about how this listener could build off of the last conversation that he or she had with the person. And maybe it's just starting the conversation. Like, let's say you're going to go have coffee with someone that you think you dominated the conversation with the last time. Maybe you just own it and you start the conversation with saying, gosh, I really feel like I dominated the conversation the last time we were together. This time I want to make sure I'm really hearing from you. Mm-hmm. I think that really shows a lot of humility, but it also opens up the dialogue, opens up the conversation. So some of that might be just, well, what questions do I ask? So maybe like I was talking about earlier, the self-talk. So maybe it's actually going and thinking ahead about the conversations you want to have and thinking ahead about some questions that you might want to ask. I do this exact same thing. And making sure those questions are open-ended. So we've heard of open-ended questions, who, what, where, when, why. So instead of asking your friend, how was your day? Try asking a question more like, what made today a good day? That opens up more dialogue. It opens up more conversation. Instead of asking, do you have plans this weekend? Try asking a question more like, what do you enjoy doing with your free time? Another thing I'll do is if I share a social media account with a friend and I have followed them, I might actually use what I saw on social media to open up an open-ended question. So it might be, oh, I saw your pictures from your vacation. What kinds of things did you enjoy doing on your vacation? Or, you know, if it was just a holiday, it looked like you had a lot of fun with your family. Tell me what Christmas with your family is like. Another thing would be just thinking about something that you admire about your friends. So again, this is kind of forcing you to think ahead about the conversation, how you want it to go. But you might say, it seems like you really enjoy your job. How did you decide to go into the field of marketing or whatever their job is or something like that? In saying all of that, though, I think you also want to be careful about how many questions you ask because you don't want them to feel like they're being interviewed and like you're the grand inquisitor, right? You still want it to be a back and forth conversation. But however, if you feel like you're moving into a monologue, you know, stop yourself from that. And then you can move out of that monologue by asking another question.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's good. And it's so interesting to think through like, Even role-playing, like you said, Carrie, in your own head of how could this conversation go differently and what can be my part in that, I think mm-hmm. is so helpful to have, especially if you're not practiced at it. I know something that I am notorious for in conversations is someone will start sharing something and I'm basically finishing their thoughts in my own head. And so then I'm on to like the next thing, either the mm-hmm. next question I want to ask or the response I'm going to give mm-hmm. and to slow my own self down to actually take in what they're saying and to appropriately respond, even with facial expressions or to be, mm-hmm. you know, because someone can tell if you're like checking out or you're interested in, you know, you're checking your phone or something. Right. I mean, that's a bad example. But yeah, so I think that's so great. Just the self-awareness for that and truly showing an interest in being that person who's going to be like, hey, okay, maybe let's take this a step back or go in a different direction. So I think that's great. So,
and I think it's also important to think about, you know, how we even build friendships to begin with. When you're asking questions of someone else, you're not just showing an interest in their lives. You're actually increasing intimacy and vulnerability in that relationship. So you're providing an opportunity to show concern for them and their lives. And so by doing that, like maybe they're sharing a struggle you can provide encouragement for. Maybe they're having, you know, throwing off some ideas. You're helping to problem solve with that. So it's really moving a friendship from just information sharing to actually building trust and authenticity. And ultimately, that strengthens the relationship and it actually builds both of you up over time.
Yeah, that's so good. Just reminds me, too, one other tip that I thought I would share is the idea of follow-up as well. So if someone's talking to you and sharing about a job interview they have come up, make a mental note of that. Or when you get home, write it down and follow up. How did the interview go? And show that continuity of the relationship. Right. And people think, oh, that sounds so forced or that sounds so like clinical or whatever. And I'm like, yeah, but you got to practice. It's a muscle you have to build. And so such great advice, Carrie. Thank you so much for weighing in on that. Well, folks, that is it for this week's show. And a reminder for those of you who have maybe tried Boundless, the audiobook, you're going to hop over to YouTube and search for boundless.org, our channel. Those of you who are YouTube fans to begin with, you can find all of our articles, or many of them, read so that you can actually access them via audio. And so whether you're in the car or on a run or doing chores, you can still get more great content from Boundless. So check that out over on YouTube at boundless.org. All right, well, that's it for this week's show. I'm Lisa Anderson, and I will see you around next week.
The Boundless Show is a production of Boundless.org from Focus on the Family.
It can be challenging to inspire your community to see life the way God sees it. So what's the solution? Well, on June 15th, Focus on the Family is hosting Sea Life 24. And no matter where you are or who you are, you can be a part of this free event with speakers like Ben and Kirsten Watson and real stories about choosing life. Sea Life 24 will inspire you to translate your faith into action. Register today at sealife24.org.